thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain.
Segment of our show is a post-dated one, so some of the events referred to may already have happened. In this segment of our show, Janet Rodriguez will be telling us a little bit about disability without poverty.
So what can you tell me about balance?
So what can you tell me about the upcoming symposium for disability without poverty?
Well, the symposium is the first ever that has been organized about research of people with disabilities by people with disabilities. And this is organized by Disability Without Poverty, which equally is a grassroots organization led by people with lived experience of disability.
So what are some of the key areas you're hoping to focus on?
Well, what we did is we put together an open call, and it was, we gave people the option to present either via video or paper, and they have submitted many things, many different themes, some related to health, some related to housing, some related to income and education, for example. So there are some a little more niche that are very specific, for example, for lower entry type education, and or a particular type of housing for people with traumatic brain injuries. So the whole congress is the symposium, sorry, is practically led by those who are choosing to participate.
So, are these submissions reflective of some of the issues generally facing those with a disability who are living in poverty? Things like access to health care and access to accessible housing, I imagine, would be a big concern.
Yes, for example, the whole symposium is virtual. It's going to be from 10 in the morning until 5 p.m. in the afternoon, Eastern time, and we are going to have two screens, so people can choose to talk from one screen and or jump to the other screen. And for example, we have some expert advocates for ODSP, which is the Ontario Disability Support Program, and they've been advocating for many, many years. And they're going to have a talk about navigating ODSD, which is for the province of Ontario. And they meet regularly every 2 weeks, and they've been meeting for decades. The goal here is to tell people what are all the benefits they can be eligible for, because the person that just applied for the first time to ODSB, they said, okay, we have benefit 1 and 2. And then we say, well, what about special supplement for a diet? If you have healthcare issues. Oh, yeah, we can give you that too. But what about, transportation? Oh, we can do that. So practically they let the person seeking the benefits to kind of guess or ask, rather than presenting, this is the options that you may have, having your personal.
inspiration behind the symposium, bringing together so many different types of experts?
Well, there were a few initiatives. Number one is that many of the research that is being conducted in Canada usually excludes people with disabilities, which is 27% of the population in Canada. And they say, for example, oh, people with disabilities are, quote-unquote, a vulnerable population. And we need special REB, which is the Research Ethics Board from the institution, to get them permission so people with disabilities will not be mistreated. But that is great. It sounds great, but it may also be sort of like a cop-out to not include people with disabilities, because then your research may take longer. It may cause, you may have added costs to provide, for example, transcriptions or to provide American Sign Language for deaf. So there are added costs to your research, and usually the researchers are not thinking right from the beginning to set aside some money to provide for this accommodation. So we decided that if they are not going to do it, we're going to do it. There's enough people with experience on many different specialties. There's people who are researchers. There's people with PhDs. And if they want to exercise their knowledge, their academic knowledge, and present a case, that's great. And we just want to make sure that we are not forgotten or excluded from research.
So, depending upon the results of this one, can you see Disability Without Poverty doing this sort of thing again, sort of on an ongoing basis, to bring to mind minds to speak out about these issues?
Absolutely. One of our board members, and she rests in peace, her name was Claire Lee. She unfortunately died, and she had cancer and worked very, very hard. Like, you would never believe that she actually was very, very ill. She had so much energy, was such a beautiful human. And this symposium, this research, is being done on her name. This is the way we are calling it, is the Claire Lee Research Collective. And we plan to do this on a regular basis and offer this space for people with lived experience to share their expertise, whether they have an academic degree or not. Knowledge is knowledge. Whether you acquire it through your life, whether you acquire it through your education.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. In this segment of our show, Hubert van Niekerk will be giving us an update on Every Canadian Counts. With the new federal budget upon us, what are your thoughts about the ongoing need for a national disability insurance strategy?
Well, I think it appears that even though the government in our budget proposal was notified of the dire need for a national disability insurance plan, at this moment they have made no mention of it, along with so many other things to do with anything new with disabilities. They've made it sound like they've improved some of the programs, but it actually has very little effect on those with long-term and lifelong disabilities.
So
it wasn't a very, we weren't holding our breath for anything magical to come out of the budget, but it's just unfortunate that the government doesn't see the benefit of such a plan.
So what are some of the steps ECC is going to be taking, not just as we wrap up 2025, but looking ahead into 2026?
Well, I think a big part of all of this, Gam, is awareness. People in the country don't know that such a plan is very possible. as they've shown in Australia, how possible this is. And so we just need more awareness, and had it been included in the budget, this would have been made aware to all people in the country. So this certainly does not affect just disabilities, it affects everybody in one way or another. So, you know, what do? We continue to talk to other organizations for collaboration. We go on, got, I believe, three panels that will be have developed and will be part of our social media. We will step up on that. We've got three university groups at Western University working on different aspects of this plan to see how we can make it work in Canada. So we, you know, even though it's not in the budget, it doesn't stop our work. It probably makes us even more determined to move forward.
So you said they're not necessarily prioritizing disability. It seems awfully short-sighted in so much as everyone will have or is likely to have a disability at some point in their life.
It's very short-sighted because not only is this, you know, the right thing to do from a human rights perspective, from the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities at the UN level. So it's not only just the right thing to do, the just thing to do, but it also happens to make economical sense. So for them to, you know, think, oh, well, you know, it's going to cost too much money or whatever, it's quite the opposite. It actually would probably make the country money. Every dollar in, usually you get $2 or more back in expenditures and creation and less costs of health care, incarceration, better education. So many things that would be beneficial, and it far outweighs any cost that this might happen. So it is short-sighted.
So
there are a lot of things, Cam, that I have been working on and been doing over the last few months. I can certainly give you a recap of what's happened there, but if you have other questions, shoot for those first. Go ahead.
Well, actually, a recap would be of interest. I mean, just to look at where we are now versus where we need to get to.
Yeah, so, you know, I just did an interview with the independent news outlet Canadian Affairs with Megan Gilmore last night. So hopefully that will hit the news outlets shortly. I did another interview with a new bulletin or a new disability paper coming up, Disability Bulletin with Emily Plott. We have the Disability Without Poverty Symposium coming up where we will have a panel. And I'll be in on a speaker series with the Toronto Metropolitan University on the cost of disabilities and how a national disability insurance plan would solve a lot of these problems of disability costs. So we'll find out very shortly whether we're in a panel with the health and well-being of developmental disabilities. That will be on February 4th and 5th. We are always trying to secure more funding. We're looking at a couple different avenues because we are a nonprofit and we are a volunteer-run organization operating with a zero budget at the moment. So certainly money helps to get the message across. It'd be nice to have a large media campaign to put forward for awareness.
So
we're on the planning committee for Global Leadership Exchange, the GLE, which will be held in Ottawa the first week of June of 2026, where we've been confirmed, like 99% confirmed, of having a session there at this Global Leadership Exchange, where we will be able to show the rest of the world how Canada is or isn't being effective and in bringing in this plan. We're working with three university student groups, like I mentioned, to try to work on this plan. Organizations, I attended an Indigenous Disabilities Forum, trying to ensure that we have Indigenous culture ways and means at the front of everything we're doing. I also attended a ASHE community forum. This is for Black individuals with disabilities. Also, how they're situation is even worse, made worse, because of the BIPOC community, Black, Indigenous, people of color. It's far harder for them to get the services than it is for white persons to get services. continue to be involved with the Ontario Association for Developmental Education, and then putting that out on their other platforms, and also with almost on the board of Large London. We continue to work with a human rights lawyer who's doing some pro bono work for us to show how the Canadian government is not meeting its constitutional and the Convention on the Rights of Persons obligations to those with disabilities, to the right to an adequate and dignified life. You know, the basics like food and housing would be nice. So with all parts of the country, we need to come closer together so that those with disabilities get what they need. We have our petition. If you want to look that up, Google that petition, 6746. You can email us, info@everycanadiancounts.com. And if people want to reach us, I'm sure they can do that through you as well. But the best way to do it, I think, for people to really get involved is to actually go to the Member of Parliament, either if they have a disability or they go with their family member, or even if they just want to see the right thing done. The Members of Parliament need to be pressured to see this as something that has to be put into place. And until the Members of Parliament get pressure, there will probably be very little done. It all starts with policy, and the only way we get policy, it seems now, is not asking nicely, but we demand it. And I think that's where the country's at. People with disabilities have had it up to here.
Right, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you.
Of course.
Andy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Stats can be hard to understand, but this one isn't. Nearly 1 in 4 people can't afford food in Canada. What does food insecurity look like where you live? Look up your address at foodsecuritynow.ca. That's foodsecuritynow.ca. Join Community Food Centres Canada in making a difference today.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Janet Rodriguez told us about the latest with Disability Without Poverty. And we heard about the latest from Every Canadian Counts from Hubert Van Niekerk. In this segment of our show, Sarnia Mayor Mike Bradley will be telling us a little bit about the importance of having political leaders with disabilities. So, in your work, what have you found to be the significance or importance of having political leaders with disabilities?
Well, it's extremely important. And to point to the late Dave Donnelly, who wasn't political, but as a lieutenant governor, impacted many lives and was a very strong voice to reach politicians, to motivate them to do the right thing.
So, can you tell me a little bit about some of the initiatives he sparked, maybe some that are still ongoing?
Well, every lieutenant governor picks a cause to champion during their term. He picked disability employment, disability access as his items to champion. And he did an excellent job doing that. And he was very visible. He was outspoken within the parameters of what a lieutenant governor can say. And he made a huge difference in getting people to think about what is necessary in Ontario. The sad part is after he left that office, he wrote a report on behalf of the Ontario government with a number of recommendations, and not one has been used or brought forward by the Ford government, which is a terrible thing for them to have done. When he passed, they praised his legacy, but they didn't do anything about implementing his legacy.
So, do you have any advice for political leaders out there as to what they can do to sort of champion the cause of disability equality?
Well, they can champion it, and I think that's good. But it's got to be real, it's got to be deep, it's got to be substantial in what changes you want. I've said it many times, signing a proclamation as a mayor or raising a flag, that's all good. It doesn't change a lot. We need dedicated people who will push for changes in the workplace as it relates to hiring, access, and all those other things that would make a difference in the lives of people with disabilities.
So, as someone who knew David Onley and someone who did some work alongside him. What stands out for you in his work and his mission to champion disability rights?
Well, I was privileged to be his first champion, official champion for the Ontario Disability Employment Network, and we had a number of others who became part of that group. That group is still working together. That group is picking new champions. And the only way you get to become a champion, it's not because you have a nice piece of paper and you got a bunch of trophies for being an advocate. You've got a pledge to continue the work, and you have a pledge to be deep in your commitment to that work. And so we're very selective who we bring in. There's only been one or two in the last few years, and that's because the criteria is pretty tough. But that's one of his lasting legacies. I think the fact that we are still doing what he wanted us to do and being advocates in our various jurisdictions. I'm a mayor, there's business people, there's nonprofit people, there's the Ontario Disability Employment Network, which now has an award named in David's honor, which continues his work.
So what are some steps that can be taken by groups like ODIN to raise awareness, to make sure that the need is still ongoing, even if David Onley has left us?
I think ODIN does a really good job. They're like all nonprofits. And they struggle financially, but they've done a really good job on focusing the issues and working with people like myself and others out there. And I've been privileged to work with them and go to their meetings and speak at their conventions and things like that. So that's substantial. And I think what it does, too, with someone like ODIN, when you bring all these groups together, it's just like we had the mayor's challenge, which is to bring cities into hiring people with disabilities and advocating, is it lets people know they're not alone out there, that they do have people who are doing the same thing in different communities. And one of my things that came about during the mayor's challenge, when I would deal with different groups in different cities trying to get the mayor and council on board, was how lonely they were and how apprehensive they were about going to their mayor and council and asking for something. One, they didn't know them in some cases, and two, they thought they'd be rejected. And I would tell them, no, you go ahead, you make your case. You've got a social justice case here. You've got a human rights case here, and don't back off. And I also recognize most of these organizations are struggling financially. The government keeps on changing the rules for their funding, and it's made it more difficult for them as they fight for the same dollars. But the mission goes on, and there's so many good people out there in Ontario and across the country doing the work still with David Onley.
So that being said, wouldn't disability groups be stronger as a united front rather than putting my agenda versus your agenda? And wouldn't it just be in their own interest?
I think that happens, but I think at the same time people want to have an impact, so they don't want to wait for everyone else to get on the bus, so they move forward. And I have seen much more coordination. And I'll give an example. When Champions Group led the charge, supported by the Toronto Star, to get rid of the workshops, which we thought were wrong, that we were paying people a dollar or two to provide work that was good work, profitable work. And so we brought a number of parties together, and we got that change. So workshops are not out there giving 50 cents for a dollar for someone doing a full day's work. So it does work when you can bring them together. And it's been tougher in the economic climate we're in, where everyone's struggling with jobs, everyone's cutting back. And so it's even harder to make the case. But good people are still doing it.
So I'd be interested to hear a little bit more about these workshops. How could they possibly justify paying a worker with a disability below what they should be getting, below everyone else?
Well, the case was made that at least they have employment. They have something good to go to. We had a place here called Wallenosh. That made the materials that worked in the piping and the chemical industry and all that, and they're getting paid like 50 cents an hour. And the opposition was, well, no, they've got gainful work. Well, then pay them a meaningful wage. And my friend Mark Wafer, that's what he did. He owned a string of Tim Hortons, and he hired so many people with disabilities, paid them more than the minimum, paid them a living wage, and many of them went on. I remember there was a couple with Down syndrome that got married and purchased their own condo, because he treated them like human beings. And I got a lot of feedback when I used to speak out in the province before COVID on pushing against workshops, where a parent would stand up and say, what are you going to take my kid now? What am I going to do with that child? And I'd make the case, I'm sorry, but there are better ways to do this. And you know what? The workshop closed here, and the people there went on to better things. And I would say more productive lives, because they're being treated with dignity and respect for the work they did.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
My friends, let's be frank about it. These are unsettling times in the economy. The disability community is no less affected than any other group in society. But the fact is, disability poverty, just like any other group, can be a generational thing. What we do today will set the pattern, set the trend for what becomes of the next generation. And honestly, what Mike said in his interview was very true. There are those who devote their whole lives to service to the disability community. They take up the cause. Isn't it only right that they should see some growth, some progress, in the sense that they want the very best for folks with disabilities? They want to see there is at least potential for the future. That being said, no one solves all the problems by themselves. The answer lies neither in simply accepting the world for being broken, nor in taking up an ego standpoint that says, I can do this all on my own. The answer, my friends, is in bringing together the best and brightest minds in the disability community. That's why things like the Disability Without Poverty Symposium are a great idea. And beyond that, they're essential for real progress. Truth is, a person with a disability sees the world from a different angle. That does not, however, mean they see it from every angle. Pooling of resources, pooling of ideas, putting aside one disability versus another, just bringing together a common need, is to say, we're all part of this great tapestry. That is the baseline from which we start to say, okay, I can work this aspect. What area of the problem can you work? What can we do together to create a better future and better opportunities for individuals with disabilities? The problem, I think, is groups see it as a competition for resources. They don't necessarily look at what the united presence of a small impact can do to create a big impact. For the fact is, putting one disability at the top of the heap and saying it's more important than any other will not solve the problems. Uniting, bringing ideas and minds together, recognizing we all have the same struggle, same need, just to survive and prosper in society. That is where we come together, and that is where, once the egos are aside, we can actually chip away at these problems. But as long as disability groups see it as, I'm the only one who should get this funding, or my priority, my agenda, is the only one that matters, we're never going to break through those walls. But, truly, there is a great potential in the disability community. There is an opportunity not only to work together, but to learn from one another. I've always said, once a disability changes your heart and mind, you don't ever go back. Perspective grows. You stop seeing merely the surface of the iceberg of life. You start to see so many beautiful and vibrant layers. You see the strength and the gifts of people, some of whom are achieving things beyond what any of us ever would have expected. You start to see that hope exists in each of us. You start to see that if a person is determined enough, has the right tools, has the right supports, they will create, they will achieve. This has been HindiLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.
Open Mic on CJSF 90.1 is where you can listen to fresh new releases. From any genre, any day of the week. Visit cjsf.ca for the latest open mic schedule.
You're You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM.